This is the Preparedness Radio Network, preparing you for natural and man-made disasters, helpful tips on gardening and homesteading. Be prepared and remember, preparedness saves lives. This is the Preparedness Radio Network.
Good day, I'm Dr. Prepper, and this is the Dr. Prepper CPR Talk Show. CPR stands for Critical Preparedness Resources. And what I do is bring people whom I've learned about, many of whom I've known for some time, many of whom I have a good working relationship, and knowledge of who they are and what they stand for. So I bring them on my show to talk to you about becoming prepared, or perhaps better prepared. And you in the audience recognize that when we do that, that they have credibility with us, and hopefully they will have credibility with you. We are almost in our fifth year of broadcasting on the Preparedness Radio Network. You can find our shows at preparednessradio.com. And again, I'm Dr. Prepper. I'm the author of a book called Making the Best of Basics, and you can get that at makingthebestofbasics.com, or you can go to, Amazon.com. Great to have you with us today as part of our show, and we are going to welcome in today Mr. Bob Gaskin. That's G-A-S-K-I-N, Bob Gaskin. Good morning, Bob. How are you?
I'm good, brother. How about yourself?
It's good to have you. I'm tremendous and getting better. That's the only comment I can make.
I hear you.
It's been a long time since we talked. You have a radio show. Tell us a little bit about what you do as you're building a crowd that's following you because of the teaching and the education you give folks. You have a radio program. You have a book. And we'll talk about all those, but why don't you just give us a short summary, since you know more about you than anyone.
Okay. The short version, which I'm known as being long-winded, so I'll give you the short version. I own Black Dog Survival School. I also am the voice of the Black Dog Survival Hour on KWTO 560 AM in Springfield, Missouri. Radio show is every Tuesday from 3 to 4 p.m. Central Time, so folks can tune in to radiospringfield.com to hear the show live, and we also record the show and post a video on YouTube and tag it to our Facebook page, which is Black Dog Survival School on Facebook. I've written a couple books. The first one is Society Ending Events, the First 180 Days. It's a pretty in-depth look into over 130 different government agencies consider around the world consider would take place in the United States the first 180 days following a society-ending event. We've got two new books coming out. The first one is The Morals of Survival. We're releasing that at Prepperfest, Arizona here about a week and a half, I guess.
Yeah.
A week from this Friday. Yeah, it's right around the corner. and then we've got a second book that's a collaboration between myself and two others. One is Madison Parker, who's a bushcraft expert. He's a Vietnam-era Navy SEAL. And the other person is Aaron Reed, who's a veteran of both Iraqi Freedom and Operation Enduring Freedom, served in both Iraq and Afghanistan as a Navy SEAL. And that book is called Developing Survival Mindset. The publisher has told us we will have copies available by the time we get to Tony's expo out there in Phoenix, so hopefully we'll be releasing that book there as well. The last thing I do is I write articles for a magazine called Prepped and Prepared Magazine. So I also do their product review, so I do quite a bit of stuff. I own a company called Emergency Food Solutions, and I've got very close ties now handling all their marketing sales for Noah's Pantry, which is just a phenomenal company. So, yeah, quite a resume there. That's the short version.
Well, so first of all, your experience, you've had some military career, a lot of training, education there, and you're sharing
Correct.
That through your schools. You also teach on
Correct.
Your By the way, you're from West Tennessee, aren't you?
East Tennessee, really. We're kind of in the eastern edge of central Tennessee, if that makes sense. We're directly north of Cookeville, Tennessee.
What's really fun is to note that you're in, active on a Springfield station. That seems to be quite, well, it's kind of middle America, isn't it? It's kind of right there in the middle of the country, east to west, and pretty much north to south. And
it is.
There, of course, I think Vince Finale is strong also there in Springfield. He's on a couple of stations, too, I believe. So Springfield must be a pretty active hotbed of people trying to level the keep America on a firm footing.
It is. It is. Actually, the way that whole thing got started is Vince had me on his show a couple of times as a guest. Of course, I used to do his expos, so I was on his radio show quite a bit. An opening came up on Fridays from 4 to 5 directly after Vincent Finale. So I took that slot. The radio station there convinced me to take that hour. So that was my first experience with having my own radio show, which is a lot harder than people think it is. And then when Vince left KWTO and went over to GCN, they had all of his time slots open, so they moved me up to Tuesday in Vince Minnelli's old spot. So we've developed quite a following in that area between the expos and the radio shows, and I'm out there, oh gosh, I've probably been out there 8 times doing seminars and workshops. And matter of fact, this week I'm heading out there before Tony's place. We're doing a seminar and workshop in Branson, Missouri, Saturday and Sunday. And then 2 weeks later, the weekend after the Prepper Fest out in Arizona, we're doing a Lights Out weekend in Branson, which is just a phenomenal training experience. So, but yeah, my background, I served in the United States Marine Corps, very proud of that service. From there, just got involved in survival training and preparedness. I've done a multitude of things. Did some time as a contractor, helping out the folks in New Orleans following Hurricane Katrina. I've been all over the world. I've been all over our country. Through the 90s, in turn of the century, I've seen both the best that humanity has to offer and the worst that humanity has to offer.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of directed the course that I'm going down now. I am a prepper, so I practice what I preach. And just kind of trying to get the word out as much as possible. A lot of people are turned off by becoming a prepper by all of the fanatics out there. So what I try to do is try to bring the common sense into it. You know, I don't focus on the conspiracies. I don't focus on the fanaticism. You know, I just focus on all of the reasons why people need to be prepared, while at the same time keeping others updated on current events and what's going on globally and all of that kind of good stuff.
Well, having been there and done that, though, gives you a feeling for it. And you were military. You were a Marine, weren't you? You were a Marine Corps?
That's correct. I was a machine gunner, Marine Corps infantry. Okay. MOS was 0331. That was 89 to 95.
I was regular Army and learned a lot. Didn't make me any worse a person, certainly made me more respectful, because I joined because I believed my country and served a full term. I didn't want to make it a career, but I did want to give some service. A lot of people said, well, you don't have to go. Why are you going? I said, and you're going enlisted. I said, I don't want to be an officer. I just want to go serve my country, and I did as a medic. So I did
right.
What I wanted to do. I had a great 3 years. I was, like you, I traveled from Greenland, the Key West, to El Paso, had a great time, and
right.
Had some tremendous experience, made some really good friends. I still communicate with some of them, because we were just good friends, and you do build relationships, especially when you find people who have the same strong feelings about what they're there for, and when you take that oath, it feels really good. In fact, it's really humbling, and it's great to have that as part of your background. Now, you've been around, now you're teaching people the same skills, self-defense skills, because they're important. Self-protection is certainly important because
correct.
We are responsible for ourselves and for our families, aren't we?
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
I said it's great being able to. I understand that sometimes there's bad connection. There's a really a great opportunity for us to share with others how strongly we feel about our country.
That's correct.
And also to teach them how to protect themselves. That they go on the offense. It says be ready to handle the defense for your family because we are responsible as parents for our families and especially for our children and for our loved ones. So are you working also to teach people the concepts of community and that you really
can't
just by yourself?
Yeah, there's actually several videos of some of my seminars on YouTube, and people can find them just by doing a Google search for either Black Dog Survival School or Bob Gaskin. But, yeah, I take a completely different approach from the mainstream preppers out there or the mainstream instructors out there. You know, a lot of folks focus on, you know, this whole concept of OPSEC, and I'm so against that. I'm the exact opposite of that. Mm-hmm. My belief is that two is one and one is none. So there's actually three areas that I believe the average person needs to focus on in their training. You know, you can have all of the stuff that you need to survive. You know, you can have all the fancy toys and the big guns and all of the food, water, fire, shelter, all that kind of good stuff. And that's great, and people need to have that. Don't get me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But you can have all of that stuff, and it doesn't mean you're going to survive because the average person out there does not have the mental or emotional training that they need to have to go through what we're all going to go through during that first 180 days. The second part of that is, in another area that I teach in, is in building the community. In recognizing that we need other people. See, my goal for society and an event, my goal is not to survive the first day. My goal is not to survive to day 180. My goal is not even to survive the first 2 years. My goal is 100 years from now, when the schools in the society that I helped to build are teaching the history of that community. My goal is to be listed in those history books as a founding father of that society. Now, I know that sounds a little egotistical, and understand, though, the reason behind that is this. We have a 50-50 chance of achieving any goal that we set out to do, okay? If your goal is to survive the first day, then you've got a 50-50 chance for that. And if that's what your goal is and that's what you prepare for, then, again, you know, that's your 50-50 chance. I look down the road. I recognize that it's not just surviving the event and it's not just making sure that our families survive the event. It's making sure that our community not only survives but thrives, and we help to develop and shape and mold that. So that's kind of the philosophy I take on it. I don't believe in OPSEC because in living by the philosophy of OPSEC, most people do not share with their neighbors, they don't share with their family, they don't share with people they come in contact with the need for being prepared because they're worried that those people aren't going to be prepared and then they're going to show up at their house, okay? My philosophy is the more people that I share that information with, the more people that are going to be prepared, the more people that are going to survive as a result of my teachings, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So instead of being worried about people not being prepared coming to my house and trying to take my stuff, I believe in building a community of like-minded individuals where people understand what's going on, begin to prepare so that when the event takes place, we're all at the same level. And that's kind of my philosophy on it. And that's the whole basis behind all of the books. The first book, Society Ending Events, the first 180 days, is a high overview, and you can get that on Amazon, but it's a high overview of what we can expect that first 80 days. And with that, the whole purpose of that book is to get people thinking about the need for being prepared. The second book, The Morals of Survival, is all about the emotional side of what we're going to go through. Understanding that, you know, a lot of people say, well, I'm going to do what I need to do. You know, I'll do whatever it takes to survive or for my family to survive. And what they don't recognize in that is that we prepare for our children. I don't prepare so that I survive. I prepare so that my children and grandchildren survive.
Mm-hmm.
So if that's the reason I prepare, then when we face that event, if I've just got this philosophy of, well, I'm going to do whatever I've got to do to survive, my children and my grandchildren are going to see how I act in the most adverse situations that humans can possibly be in.
Mm-hmm.
the way that they will grow and develop will be predicated off of the leadership and example that I give them. So the society that I will be living out my golden years in is one that will be ruled by adults that were children during the aftermath of a society and an event. So do I want to spend my golden years in a society that is ruled by people that believe that you do whatever you have to do, and no matter what the consequences, and if somebody has something you need, you just take it, and blah, blah, blah? Or do I want to live in a society that is morally founded? You know, I mean, take the religion out of it. Take all of our education out of it. And just focus on the bare basics. Do I want to live in a society that is ruled by people that believe that we take care of others and we help others? Or do I want to live in a society that is ruled by people that believe that we take from others and we don't care about the consequences and we don't care about what happens to them? Mm-hmm. So that's the basis behind the emotional preparedness and the reason why I wrote the book, The Morals of Survival.
I want to get deeper into that, because you postulate some interesting scenarios that can create moral dilemmas, and we need to deal with those because there will be some things that we'll have to do that may not be our first choice looking at it now, but it may be our only choice to continue to live in the future. No one knows what's going to happen in the future, but there are some causative factors. And I'm assuming that at Black Dog Survival is where you train people to get the positive attitude, the I can, I will, and attitude. And that's really important in preparedness. Well, again, let's take a quick break. I want to come back and let's get into, I want to talk about The Morals of Survival, your new book. You're going to be introducing that, what, 10 days?
10 days.
At the Prepper Fest Arizona show. By the way, we should tell people that that's happening the weekend of 21st, 22nd, 23rd of March, which is this weekend. By the time they hear this, it'll be this weekend. It's forthcoming, and it's going to be there in Phoenix. You can find it at PrepperFestAZ.com. There's a complete itinerary. We don't have to tell you all that kind of stuff. Lots of speakers. Lots of booths. It's a big show. It's been done several times before. The owner, Tony Tangelos, is a good friend of yours, good friend of mine. I've known Tony quite some years. He does a great job. Very straightforward, very honest individual. I've known him a long time. He's striving to do what he feels is the work of faith to help other people become prepared or get better prepared, because you can never be too prepared. But as you said, one is none and two is one. That's espoused for some. It's probably more military than anything else, because they don't think like we do out here. Because everything is life. But I'm assuming also that one of the things you teach is that the fact that people plan as well as they can, striving to see into the future and determine what they can do to preempt surprises. Yet, as the general said after he did all the briefing before the battle, he said, this is our plan. You're going to do this, you're going to do that, support, blah, 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 and here's what you do when this happens. He said, but, you know, when it's all said and done, after the first bullet leaves the muzzle, the whole scenario changes because you don't
know. That is so true.
So people don't seem to understand it, but it is real, because when there's interaction of people, you're never really in total control. Things are going to happen because our vagaries, I guess, of the way we do things as individuals will reshape, and constantly reshape, in fact, any action wanted.
That's right.
Yeah, just one bullet in the wrong place, and it could end that problem for you, or for one.
That's
anyway.
Correct.
All right. Well, let's come back and talk about more about the morals of survival, and also your other book that we haven't mentioned yet, Developing the Warrior Mindset. We want to talk about mindset, and that's part of our morals, so we can come back. This is my interview today with Bob Gaskin. Bob is a dedicated prepper, but he's also a survivalist, because I think that's our greatest drive. You can call it what you want. People can say, ooh, it's scary to think about surviving, but, you know, it's our number one drive. We'll do anything I was laughing once, and Mike said, "Oh, I don't want to hurt anybody." And I thought, you know, the important thing, people will kill to stay alive. And he said, "Oh, that's scary." Yeah, but think about it. People will do that because what's more important than your life? And you can turn people into monsters in a heartbeat when you threaten the life, their own life, their family's life, even their dog's life. I mean, you've got a battle on your hands with people. So we'll come back and talk about those things. Bob, it's really good to have you with us today. We'll be right back. This is the Dr. Prepper CPR talk show, critical preparedness resources. Today we'll be discussing a number of them, especially the morals of being prepared and also being able to help others. Be right back with the Dr. Prepper CPR talk show right after a word from our sponsors.
You're listening to the Preparedness Radio Network. We'll be back after a word from our sponsor.
Want to reduce your dependence on the electrical grid? Trying to save money on groceries? Preparing for a major power outage? We can help. Layman's is your source for everything you need for heat, food, light, and water when there is no power. Glenda Lehman Irvin here for Layman's in Kidron, Ohio. My father, Jay Lehman, founded our store in 1955 to serve the local Amish with non-electric appliances, tools, and houseware items. Today, through our website, laymans.com, a print catalog, and a retail store, we provide oil lamps, water pumps, wood stoves, canning supplies, and hand tools to customers all over the world. If you think it isn't made anymore, check with Lehman's before you give up. Visit laymans.com or call us at 1-877-438-5346 for a free catalog, or just stop by. We're located about an hour south of Cleveland.
Making the Best of Basics Family Preparedness Handbook by James Talmadge Stevens. He's been a part of the preparedness community, sharing information since the beginning. That's why he's known as Dr. Prepper. Making the Best of Basics has been the all-time best-selling volume in the preparedness industry for almost four decades, updated and revised to provide the most relevant information available. You can choose the new CD-ROM version that's jam-packed full of special features. Or, for instant access to all the information, you can purchase the digital download version and have every how-to, every article, every recipe, and every resource available immediately. No weight and no freight. Visit www.makingthebestofbasics.com today and get your hands on this essential preparedness resource. While you're there, take the free Family Preparedness Self-Assessment Test. Be sure to stop by makingthebestofbasics.com for the CD-ROM, digital download, or print book, or all three. Making the Best of Basics. If you're going to buy just one resource to help you maximize your preparedness, this is the one. Making the Best of Basics.
Thanks for listening to a word from our sponsors. Now, back to the show on the Preparedness Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Dr. Prepper CPR talk show on Preparedness Radio and Preparedness Radio Network. We are the Preparedness Radio Network. And we welcome you back. We're having a discussion today with Bob Gaskin, an author, a preparedness, I guess you could say, and survivalist expert. At least you're teaching it, so we will have to assume that. It makes us feel better if we think that about you, Bob. And I'm sure with the time you put into it, as you would say in the military, with my time in grade, I certainly learned something. And so today I want to discuss, that's what a sergeant was always telling me. He said, "I've got more time in grade than you got in the service." I said, "Too bad." He didn't like that, but it was a civilian comment. And they fortunately I was medical, so I didn't have to carry a weapon. And when they would say something, "Where's your weapon?" I'd say, "I'm not allowed to carry a gun." They would just come unglued. Okay. So let's talk about the morals of survival. It's a new book. You dedicate to your wife and family, and certainly it's an important thing. And also you said there are a couple of people who give you great influence, probably help you center your life and be willing to do and think the way you do. That's where we get our education. But you discuss what you consider your mission in life. You want to share that with people and let them kind of know how you feel about it?
Sure, sure. Okay, so, where to begin with that one? Okay, so, I hear you. Mission in life. My mission in life is very simple, okay? There are very dark days ahead of us. And I'm not talking about the conspiracies or anything like that. If you just follow the Earth cycles, everything in life is cyclic. We're born, we live life, we grow up, we get married, we have children, they get married, they have grandchildren, we retire, we die. It's a cycle. The day is a cycle. We have morning, noon, evening, and nighttime. And most things in life are cycles of four, okay? Like the seasons, spring, winter, summer, fall, you know. So I look at the things that are cyclic, and there's very specific Earth cycles that we are coming to right now that are troubling to me. One is the 432-year cycle, one's the 3,647-year cycle, and one is the 5,464-year cycle, all of which expire within a 26-month period that started in October of 2012 with the expiration of the 432-year cycle. And I know you don't want to get into cycles, but the purpose of saying all of that is this. There's plenty for us to be concerned about and to be preparing for without working into it, all of the conspiracies of, you know, did we really walk on the moon? Did, you know, who killed JFK? What's going on with FEMA camps? Yada, yada, yada. These are things that are distractions that get people bogged down. I'm a very firm believer of, in fact, let me kind of step back. I have a saying that I like to use, a little story I like to tell. It's kind of like a parable. You know, the way I view the average prepper, the average prepper is somebody that gets up on that first beautiful spring morning and takes their family to the beach for the first time after a cold winter. And they get to the beach, and they have this one-gallon pail. And they carry that pail down to the water, and they fill that pail up, and they take it back to where their family's sitting at. And they set the pail down in the sand, and they turn their back on the beach, and they focus all of their attention on that bucket of water because they are afraid that that bucket of water is going to spill over and get their blanket wet. Okay? Well, two things happen during the course of that day. One, because they're so focused on that bucket of water and they're afraid that bucket of water that they brought to their blanket is going to spill and get their blanket wet, that they miss out on all of the joy and the experience of what their family is doing that day at the beach. The second thing that happens is invariably the tide's going to come in. And because they're not focusing on the ocean, they're not focused on the water, and they're only focused on this little bucket, they're not paying attention to that tide coming in. And when it does, it gets their blanket wet. So the very thing that they fear the most, the end result that they fear the most happening, happens anyway because they're not paying attention because they're so focused on that which brings them the fear.
Yeah.
Okay? And that's how I view a lot of preppers, because what happens is they have that moment of awareness. They have that aha, I'm awake moment where they realize they need to be prepared. And typically that aha moment comes after something they have been convinced is going to happen sparks fear inside them that makes them concerned for their family's survival or their own survival, okay? And the problem with that is that becomes the focus of their life, and they miss out on life. They miss out on all the joy that life has. They spend all of their money on buying all of this stuff that they think is going to get them through a society-ending event, and they stop focusing on taking their spouse to, you know, on date night or going to their kid's soccer game or getting involved in anything other than being prepared. It becomes all-consuming for them. Mm-hmm. So here's my mission in life. My mission is multifold. My mission is to get people to stop focusing on that one little thing that brings them fear and to instead pay attention to the big picture so that they can accurately prepare for what's coming. That's number one. Number two, learn to live life. We only get one shot at it. You know what I'm saying? It's like the roller coaster ride that we're all on, and we keep our eyes closed and we scream and we miss the whole thing, and then when we get off, we realize we actually enjoyed it, want to ride it again. But with life, we can't get back on.
Yeah.
So we're either going to go through life shivering in fear of what could possibly maybe someday be on the horizon, right? Or we can live life and enjoy it while at the same time recognizing that life poses dangers that threaten ourselves and our families, and we need to be prepared to overcome those threats when they become a reality. So that's kind of my mission in life, and that's the reason for the three books. The first book, Society Ending Events, the first 180 days, is a high overview of what the country will go through during the first 180 days following a society event, hence the title. At the same time, it's got some really good information in it about how to get prepared, what you need to stockpile, what you need to have for preparedness. But again, it's a high overview of what I teach. Because the need for being prepared is not the main focus of what I teach people as far as being prepared with physical items. Hence the reason for the second book, The Morals of Survival. There are two other things that people need to train themselves and develop themselves with, skills they need to have that are more important in surviving than having stuff. Okay? The first one is the emotional training. Hence the Morals of Survival. That's where we really get into all of the different scenarios, all of the different situations. Almost every chapter has a different scenario. We run through the scenario, and then we talk about all the ways you can prepare for that, the decisions you'll have to make during it. You know, a lot of people think, well, I've got a gun, and when somebody comes a threat to my family, I'll just shoot them. No, you won't.
No.
Studies have shown, governmental studies, listen, the government has a lot more money than we do. Okay, unless you're Bill Gates, the government has more money than you. So the government has the funds to do these studies. And what the government's found out is that in our society today, in our level of civility in our civilization, the government has determined that one out of every 100 Americans have the intestinal fortitude to point a firearm at another person and pull the trigger. And only one out of every 100 of them have the intestinal fortitude to point a firearm at another person, pull the trigger, knowing that the second they pull that trigger, that person's life will end, and they're able to do it anyway. Which tells me that only one out of every 10,000 Americans have that internal intestinal fortitude to do what will actually need to be done when the moment arises. The other 9,999 will have that moment of hesitation where they have to think about what they're actually doing. Okay, and that's both good and bad. Today it's good because it shows that our civilization has reached a level where we don't want to just run around haphazardly killing people, which I'm very thankful for, you know. While at the same time, when we face a society event, people are going to need those skills. So there's emotional training that people need to do. One, they need to recognize that they were going to be put into certain situations in the aftermath of a society event. Two, they need to determine now what they will do, what course of action they will take. Three, they need to weigh out when they're looking at these situations, they need to weigh out, if I follow this course of action, how will my spouse and my children and my grandchildren judge me? Keeping in mind that it doesn't matter how they would judge you if they're going to be dead as a result of your inaction. You see what I'm saying? So there's a whole emotional aspect of this that goes along with being prepared. You have to understand what you're going to face and then how you're going to face it, how you're going to react, so that you eliminate that moment of hesitation when it's time to act. So that's the basis of Morals of Survival. We talk about, you know, I don't bring a lot of religion into the book. It's my opinion is state the facts, not opinion, and anytime you interject religion, you're interjecting opinion. Okay, mm-hmm. So I try to get people to just see the facts and the reality of those facts. Then you have the mental aspect of surviving, hence the book Developing the Warrior Mindset. On that, it's a collaboration between myself and two other gentlemen, both are Navy SEALs. Everybody has combat experience. We've all seen the worst that humanity has to offer. We've seen the best. We understand what the mind goes through when it enters into combat. And we understand what the mind goes through in living with this. As a matter of fact, there's one chapter from The Morals of Survival is titled Living Life After Dealing Death. And it's all about understanding the physical, mental, emotional things that your body goes through, okay, once you've had to do something like that, once you've been in actual combat. So the purpose of developing the warrior mindset is to get people to understand that there's more to being a warrior than playing, you know, some Xbox game. There's more to being a warrior than standing up and boastfully stating that I'll do whatever it needs to, you know, be done. It's more than just that. You you have to be physically prepared with the food, water, fire, shelter, first aid, and hygiene that you need. You have to be mentally prepared for what you're going to face and what you're going to have to do. Then you have to be emotionally prepared to understand what you're going through so that you can keep your wits about you and not break down and have a nervous breakdown in the midst of this whole event that you've been preparing for your entire life. Those three books cover those three areas, and that's pretty much the basis of what we teach and why we teach it. We keep up with all the current events. I spend a minimum of 4 hours a day studying what's going on globally. I don't just study what man is doing, and I study what's going on with our natural events, with our earth cycles. I study what's going on with political events and economic events, and I only focus on the facts. And with that being said, I'm able to present to people in our seminars and our workshops, and when I do teachings at expos, and when I'm sitting talking with the waitress at a restaurant I'm at, I only present the facts and I let them make up their own mind. And then once they research some of that stuff and realize that it is correct and it is a fact and that there are dark days ahead of us, they recognize the need to get prepared. And then that's where I help them start to get physically prepared. Once we've achieved that goal, I work on getting them mentally and emotionally prepared. Unfortunately, in my personal opinion, not my professional opinion, but my personal opinion, I don't think that we're running out of time. I think the time's actually run out. So we've really stepped up, achieving our mission. We're reaching out to as many people as possible. We don't use terms like OPSEC because I don't believe in it. I believe we have to get the word out. It's just something that needs to be done. And that's what I do.
Well, it sounds like you have a plate full of stuff you have to keep up with. Well, I really appreciate that you've thought through the process of a family response plan, because we do respond to the agent of need. We don't just go out and create a scenario. What we're typically doing is responding or reacting, which is the lesser of the two. We typically are responding and reacting to situations which are foisted upon us, and those are typically disasters because we handle. Again, driving to work every day, even though it's fraught with the possibility of a lot of things going wrong when you figure how many people are making individual decisions along a route.
Exactly.
We then have to deal with whatever happens. I people always used to walk around me. They were always saying, hope for the best, fear the worst. And that was their... that was their mantra, as it were. And right. Then I began to realize that that's a two-legged stool, not very stable, to just kind of, okay, Lord, whatever, lay it on me, kind of attitude, or hit society, whatever you give me, or boss, whatever you throw at me, I'll just be hurt or I won't. But really, the third leg that gives stability to that little homily, is what it's called, is that you have to learn to deal with what you get. Whatever
right.
happens, you got to deal with it. And what you're
right.
doing in your classes and in your books and certainly in your training sessions is to teach people skills, give them talents, they may have the talent, you got to give them abilities because talent is raw. You have to develop it. And then when they do that, they can deal, given that they pump their mind, the mental part, if they pump their mind with good stuff, if they put in good stuff, they can get good stuff out of it. So if people have the idea that preparedness is, you buy the book and you're prepared, or you buy the food and you're prepared, or you buy the, fire maker, whatever you want to call it. Or it's like buying a gun and now you're going to defend your family. But as you said, it's not that easy because... when somebody says, I'm sure I've said it too, I know that I have spent my whole life getting ready. Well, the last 40 years, that's a good part of my life. That's more than some of these people have been around. I've tried to live by the rules of preparedness. And as you've done, as you've learned, well, you learned it in the military. You only had so much, so much gear and so much food and so much water. And everything else had to be developed as you went forward. And, of course, if, under one scenario, whatever you can find is yours. The other is that you have to treat people with respect and do respect for other people, or you're just, you know, you're just everybody's enemy. So the idea of being a warrior is that we are at war with things going on around us over which we have no control, aren't we?
That's right. Yeah, basically, you know, I've got in one of the classes I teach, I play the first, I don't know, 8 or 7 or 8 minutes of the movie Saving Private Ryan. That opening scene is, in my opinion, one of the most accurate depictions of combat ever. You know, you've got they've got a mission, they've got to storm the beach and take out the enemy in order to survive, while at the same time the enemy's trying to prevent them from storming the beach and taking out the enemy. And you've got a lot of people that are huddled up next to whatever shelter they can find, and they're afraid to move. And the whole time you got this captain telling people, you got to move forward, you got to move forward, we got to take out the beach. You can't get slowed down because your buddy got killed. You've got to keep moving forward or you're going to get killed, you know. That, the ability to do that does not come from watching TV shows and you know, playing war games and all of that. The ability to do that comes from developing a mindset of, it doesn't matter what's going on around me, I have to achieve the mission or I will not survive.
Right.
And that's the basis of developing the warrior mindset. But, you know, you mentioned a good point. You know, people drive to work every day and you know, they're thinking about what they've got going on, not realizing that there are thousands of people around them making decisions as well, and decisions that could impact their lives. Let me give you a quick history on me as far as how I became a prepper and why, and more importantly, how my wife became a prepper, because it really ties in with what you'd said. I went to Panama in 91. We were supposed to be there for 29 days. We had four different missions we were going to run. Each was a 3 to 5 day mission. We would have downtime between each mission. We would have downtime when we first got in country of a couple of days to acclimate and understand the environment, all of that kind of good stuff. Instead, what happened is 2.5 hours after our plane hit the tarmac, I was on a Black Hawk heading out into the jungle. And 27 days later, my 6-man team walked out of the jungle. Okay, we were restocked twice. When we left, we were given 3 days' worth of food and water. The two restockings, we were given 2 days' worth of food and water. That's a total of 7 days. And we spent 27 days in the jungle out of the 29 days we were in Panama. It was a very horrible experience. I ate things that I never thought I would eat in my life. I ate beetle. I ate weird birds I'd never seen. We ate monkeys. We ate snakes. We ate fish. We ate whatever we could come up with to eat that would not kill us. With that philosophy in mind, when I came home, the second day I was at home, I took an extra Alice pack that I had and some extra MREs and some bottles of water, and I filled all my canteens, and I put together my basic kit that I would take with me if I was going out into the field as a Marine Corps infantryman. And I carried it out and put it in the trunk of my car when my wife and I were taking my children to go see a movie. And my wife looks at me as I'm putting this backpack in the back of the car in the trunk, and she says, "What are you doing?" And I said, "That's our emergency kits, food, water, fire, shelter, first aid, and hygiene. If anything happens, we've got the means to get home." And she looks at me kind of with this weird look on her face. I'm sure most preppers, male preppers, have seen this from their wives at some point in time. But she gives me this look. Yeah, right? She gives me this look, and she says, "You realize this is the United States of America, not the jungles of Panama. You're not going to need that here." At that moment, I realized that not only did I need to get prepared, but my wife was not going to be on board with it. So over the course of the next, 12, 13, 14 years, I was getting prepared, but I wasn't really doing it at a quick state. You know, we had a house fire in 2011, and we found our Y2K emergency kit in the closet. And we're looking through this kit going, yeah, like this would have really helped us to survive, right? So, you know, there's been an evolution here. Well, when I went down to New Orleans in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina, something clicked inside of me. I saw that, yes, even though this is the United States of America, things can happen here. And, yes, eventually the government will get there and do what they can do, but they are not going to ensure that we survive. They don't have the resources to ensure that we survive. Things changed in my life at that point, and I really kicked up the prepping. I got more involved in understanding what's going on around the globe, both with natural events and with economics and with politics. Really started focusing more on the survival aspect of it, the preparedness aspect of it, and started training others how to do it. Back then, it wasn't even a business. It was just something I did to ensure that I would have a community to be a part of in the aftermath of a society in an event. One day we were at a party, and it was pretty much like a little dinner party. And one of the people there is a friend of a mutual friend of ours that was hosting the party. But this guy, he looks at me, and he and I knew each other, and we'd done things for each other in the past, and worked with each other on occasion, but we weren't really friends. But he looks at me and says, "Well, Bob, you're one of those crazy preppers. What are you preparing for? What's the thing that's got you so afraid you can't sleep at night and enjoy your life?" And I realized by his statement that that's how the average person views preppers. We're crazies, we're afraid, yada, yada, yada. And I looked at him and I said, "Joe," I said, "I don't fear anything. I hope for the best, I prepare for the worst, and whatever happens, I'll be okay, but I prepared now to make the decisions I'm going to have to make so that when I face those situations, I have a better chance at surviving them." I said, "But you want to know what I prepare for? I'll tell you, I prepare because I love my family. I love my wife. I love my two daughters. No matter what I face in life, they're going to be okay. I could lose my job tomorrow. I could get in a car accident. Heaven forbid I should pass away. But things happen in life. And no matter what happens to me, if I lose my life, it could take up to 90 days for the insurance policy to pay out to my wife for my life insurance. I'm the sole source of income in my family. If something happens to me, what's my wife going to do to feed the children if I don't have a stockpile of 3 to 6 months worth of food? How's she going to buy toilet paper and shampoo and toothpaste and all the other things that bring comfort to our lives if I haven't stockpiled it, if something happens to me and that income stops coming in?" And I looked at the guy and I said, "Joe," I said, "more importantly, I need to ask you, why are you not a prepper? How come you don't love your wife more than that new TV you just bought? How come you don't love your children more than that new car or that new boat that you just bought?" I said, "When the ice storm took place, I was the first person you called when we didn't have electricity. I was the first person you called that brought you one of my extra generators and 20 gallons of gas because you couldn't even get out of your driveway. You're not prepared with your vehicle. You're not prepared with your home. You're not prepared with your life." And I kind of got a little upset at the guy and kind of got a little derogatory towards him. I said, if I was your wife, I'd divorce you in a heartbeat because you don't care enough about her to prepare for a day when you're unable to provide for her and your children. And that's when I recognized the look on my wife's face and realized I'd probably overstepped my bounds, right? So we got up and we left the party. It was a 48-minute drive home at night. And all the way home, my wife is staring out the passenger side of the window, not saying a word to me. So the average guy, when your wife doesn't talk to you for a 48-minute car ride, you're in a world of trouble, right? So we pull in the driveway, and I opened my door, and when I did, the internal light came on, and my wife turned and looked at me, and there were tears, literally tears rolling down her face. And I said, "Are you okay?" Yeah, I thought I was in a lot of trouble then, right? And she says, I get it. This whole time you've been preparing so that you can provide for us if something happens to you. You love us that much that you're looking at every little aspect of what you need to do to provide for us, and I've been fighting you on it." And I said, "Well, it is what it is." And she says, "Okay, I'm in. I'm in." And it was at that moment that I recognized that in my teaching, we need to stop being fanatics. A fanatic is somebody that won't change their mind and can't change the topic. And what we're doing is we're presenting this front to the rest of society that we're a bunch of crazy survivalists that fear life and fear living that life. What we need to do is start living the example. Why are we getting prepared? We're getting prepared because of our family. We love our family. If it was just me, I'd be fine with a couple months worth of food and water and plenty of ammo and weapons and a hidey hole location. I can go up in the mountains of Montana and forget about society and take care of myself. But I don't have that luxury because I do have a wife and I have two children and I have three grandchildren now. So I prepare for them. I can get them better prepared, and I can be better prepared if they're on board with it. So I've got to stop being a fanatic to my friends and family. I've got to stop presenting this front that I'm a crazy survivalist that's afraid of living life, and just focus on the facts. And my teachings at that point in time really took a different turn. I had a job where I was making almost $250,000 a year as a chief operating officer of a low voltage infrastructure installation company. And I walked away from that. I walked away from it. Started a company where we teach others what they need to know, how they need to get prepared, both physically and mentally. But then we threw in the emotional aspect of it too. And it's really taken off. And I really feel like when this nation faces a society and an event, there are hundreds of people out there that are no longer fanatics, and they're no longer asleep. And they're watching for the events to take place. And when they happen, they'll be ready for them. So I really feel like my life has taken a turn to where, for completely selfish reasons, my own survival depended on a community of like-minded individuals that have already prepared. To achieve that selfish goal, I had to be completely unselfish in spreading the word with others. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
And your story is a great story, because until the couple, until both members of the management of the family, and that has to be equally shared by husband and wife, neither should ever be subject to the other, except in terms of superior responsibility. But
right.
That's a guy job. It was kind of ordained that we protect our family. And
right.
I certainly, you know, I get a little stove up too when I hear you tell your story, because it is so similar to others who've gone through the same transition. So in some cases, it was the husband who who hadn't bought in because he was so arrogant, or it's the wife because she doesn't want to appear weird
to
her friends and neighbors. And those are human things. But when people realize that there are things over which we have no control, and that there are really only three things. Only three kinds of disasters we have to prepare for, and they're the natural ones over which we have absolutely no control, and they're tremendous powers, whether they be weather-related or geologically related. And,
right.
Of course, the mankind ones, where the war is one of them, terrorism is another. Certainly the things we build that fail are buildings that fall down as a result of the attack.
Right.
Sure. There's a cascading effect. We won't go there because it's your show, not mine. And then there are the personal disasters. They're the only three
right.
kinds of things that can ruin your life. Everything else is just life. But the hard part is, what do you prepare for? And when we come back, I want to have you explicate to people how you teach people to prepare and assess the risk level of different items and things that they need to prepare for, and how they go about
sure.
it. And if you don't
sure.
mind doing that. And so Bob, it's Bob Gaskin, the author of the new book, Morals of Survival. And I like the society ending event. That's your first book for the first 180 days. And though we can, what shall I say, we can forecast, prognosticate, diagnose. There are all kinds of things we can do to preview the future. We don't know. We're not in charge. But
right.
the more you are prepared, the easier it will be to transition from what we would call our normalcy to whatever happens in the future. And that's what you do as a living. You have that business, the Black Dog Survival School, where you train people, teach people. Do you export that? If it's a group large enough, you can take the class to them, the training to them, or do they need to come and be part of the physical setup that you have?
No, we actually do the training all over the country. We've got our jungle training areas down in Florida. Our urban training is in Arizona and Michigan. Woodland training we do in Tennessee and Kentucky. And the mountain training we do in North Carolina and Alaska. From there, we literally travel all over the country. If there's a group, you know, we won't do it for like two or three people because the cost is too high for them to be able to afford it and for us to be able to do it and make a profit. But For groups all over the country. I mean, I speak at churches. We rent halls at hotels to do seminars and workshops. A lot of groups will say, hey, I got 28 members in my group. What would you charge to come out here? And normally, it's as long as I get my expenses covered, I'm super happy. That's my mission in life. I don't have to make a profit on everything I do. I just have to get people to understand the need for doing what they need to do.
Well, profit for you is doing what you love.
Exactly.
As my wife says, if you had all the money on earth and didn't have any other responsibilities, what would you do? And, that's the kind of woman she is. She gives me she says, whatever you're supposed to be doing, just do it darn well. And think about the fact that if you didn't have the impediments of daily life, what would you do? Recognizing that you can't get away from impediments. But the point
exactly.
is, if you didn't have to worry about income, if you didn't have to worry about going to work every day, what work would you do? And she says, if you're doing what you love, there is no work to it. It's just
right.
She said it's not quite a hobby because it's too much work for a hobby because it takes effort. And I've been doing this for many years, and I certainly relate to your desire to help people simply by being. Being in the traces, it's the horse. Remember, my dad would loosen the reins on the hitch to the wagon, pull off all the gear from the back of the horse, and say, "Go on home, Maud," and she knew exactly where to go.
Exactly.
But in the morning, she was waiting to get in the traces, because he treated
right.
her with respect, and she loved to work because he was always talking to her, and so Maud, you're just the best old horse. You've been around. You're going to outlive me. She did, but my grandfather had that relationship, and then my dad was very much that way with the men he hired in his business. So, I guess I had that kind of bringing up, as we say.
Nice.
I'm a Southern boy. I'm from North Carolina, so I can talk like that. Bob Gaskin, we'll be back in just a moment. Your new book, Morals of Survival, we discussed that somewhat. I'm going to come back and talk about the warrior mindset, because mindset for survival is absolutely critical to that. Do you want to tell how they can get in touch with you at your website?
Sure. We really don't keep up with our website that much because I'm not a web designer. But
okay.
People can hit the website. They can email us through the contact form. Also, my cell phone number is on the website. People can email me at bob@blackdogsurvivalschool.com for all of our updates. We update our Facebook page probably 20 times a day, and that's the Black Dog
right.
Survival School page on Facebook. That's really where they can keep up with us. My cell phone number's on there. People can text me, call me, email me, private message me through Facebook, post on the wall. We're very easy to get in contact with. So.
Right. All right. Well, we'll urge people to get in touch with you. Let's take a break, come back, and we want to talk about the warrior mindset, because mindset is probably the most critical part. The situational scenarios that you introduce in your book, Morals, is certainly one that maybe we'll have an opportunity to discuss one or two of those. We'll be back. I'm Dr. Prepper. This is the Dr. Prepper CPR Talk Show on the Preparedness Radio Network through preparednessradio.com. We'll be back in just a moment.
You're listening to the Preparedness Radio Network. We'll be back after a word from our sponsor.
Everyone knows that the fresher the food, the better. Better for health, nutrition, and of course, taste. This is especially true with grains and flours that can become rancid so quickly. That's why it's important to have a quality grain mill for use today and in your preparations. The Wonder Mill Company is the only American company to produce an electric mill as well as a manual mill, and they're made with the highest quality materials and workmanship. They create the finest flours, whether from whole grains, gluten-free grains, beans, and even more. The Wonder Mill Electric Mills and the Wonder Junior Deluxe Manual Grain Mills are the highest rated grain mills for good reason. They work and they're built to last. Visit the Wonder Mill website to check out their videos, reviews, recipes, and to find a dealer near you today. That's thewondermill.com.
Looking to get the real boil for your buck? The Kelly Kettle may be the most versatile and valuable piece of camping or emergency preparedness equipment that you can own. By quickly and easily starting a fire, protect it from both the wind and the rain, boil water and cook food at the same time, Kelly Kettle provides the ability to stay warm on a cold night, stay fed with hot food, stay hydrated, stay clean, and stay alive. All with a portable kettle that fires up with just a few pieces of natural fuel, like a pine cone, dry twigs, or bark. The Kelly Kettle is a highly efficient portable, double-walled water kettle and cook stove. It will quickly become your favorite accessory when it comes to camping, fishing, backpacking, and emergency preparedness. You don't want to be without a Kelly Kettle. Check out the different Kelly Kettle models and accessories today at KellyKettleUSA.com. That's KellyKettleUSA.com.
Our sponsors. Now, back to the show on the Preparedness Radio Network.
We're back for the third and final segment of the Dr. Prepper CPR Talk Show on Preparedness Radio and the Preparedness Radio Network. Bob Gaskin is my guest today. Bob is the author of several books, a brand new one coming out next in just a few days, at the weekend of the 21st, 22nd, I guess. At the show in Phoenix, PrepperFestArizona.com. That's PrepperFestAZ.com, sorry. And you already have a book out, Society Ending Events, the first 180 days. Why 180 days? What are the best guesses of people that if we have a cataclysmical failure of our society, 180 days is a really valid goal, isn't it?
Right.
Well, what makes it so?
Okay, basically, back in 2003, 2004, a lot of people aren't aware of this, but the first time we came across the economic crossroads, not just here in the country, but globally, was end of 2003, beginning of 2004. It's a very tense situation globally. There for about 6 days, almost every nation in the world was either preparing for launching a war or preparing to defend against a war. It was a crazy week. And I don't know if a lot of people remember that, but they can go back and Google that and watch the news on that. But in 2004, the United Nations, recognizing that the world's economy was dependent on the economy of the United States, the United Nations formed a committee and basically asked every nation that was part of the UN to participate in this program, where they wanted to know what life in their country would look like. What would the repercussions in their country be should the United States' economy crumble? Okay. About 7-8 months later, they took it a step farther, and they asked the same countries to participate in a program to see, you know, they want to know what their thoughts were on what the United States would look like should our economy crumble, or should we face some type of natural nationwide disaster that would cause our way of life to come to a screeching halt. Okay. 137 different government agencies from around the world participated in that, not just here in the United States. The interesting thing about it is out of 137 different government agencies from around the world looking at what the United States would look like in the aftermath of what I call a society-ending event, they came to the conclusion, 123 of those agencies came to the conclusion that within 180 days, 88 to 94% of our population would be dead. Okay. It goes even more in depth as to, you know, different disaster scenarios, what would happen the first day, the first 15 days, the first 30 days, the first 60 days, so forth and so on. And a lot of people aren't aware of that. They think, well, just, you know, my neighbor's a crazy fanatic, you know, and he's afraid of living life, and he says a whole bunch of people are going to die if something happens. But in reality, the entire world understands what we fail to recognize, and that's if we face a society-ending event here in the United States, within 6 months, within the first 180 days, 88 to 94 of us are dead. And so when you look at that and you expand it out, what I try to do is I try to get people to understand what that looks like. And that's the reason for the different scenarios in the different books that we do. But the big one is this. At day 30, 46% of our population is dead. Not hurt, not wounded, not sick, dead. That's one out of two people, basically. Which means that there will be no critical services. So when people that aren't preppers start to run out of food, and they leave their house in search of food, not only are they going to encounter roving bands of looters and punks and thugs and street trash, right? But at the same time, everywhere they look, they're going to see dead bodies. Cars they pass are going to have dead people in them. Homes they pass are going to have people dead or dying in their front yards. You know, they walk into a building and there's dead people. And that's the thing that most people don't recognize. They understand the need for having the food, water, fire, shelter, first aid, and hygiene so that they don't have to leave their home and go out into these environments or their retreat community or wherever they're planning on going when we face a society and event. But the simple fact of the matter is that the survivors of the aftermath of a society and event are going to have to face that. And there's a huge, gigantic mental, emotional aspect of dealing with that. You know, day 8 after Hurricane Katrina, when you're seeing people that are starving, that would give all of their possessions for a bowl of soup or a half of a bottle of water, it really makes you recognize what our country's going to look like. And the simple fact of the matter is the average person goes to the grocery store once a week and they buy a week's worth of groceries. They don't have a cupboard full of canned goods. They don't have, you know, enough toilet paper to last them 6 months. Imagine how desperate people are going to start to get about 6 or 7 days after they run out of toilet paper. That's a miserable existence. So the point that I try to get across to people is not what they need to do to prepare for themselves and their family, but to understand what they're going to face. It takes a tremendous mental and emotional toll on a person. If everywhere you turn, where you're so used to society being what it is now, and all of a sudden you're in a situation 10, 15, 20 days after things fell apart, and everywhere you turn, all you see is dead people or people that are dying, you know, it will take such a mental and emotional toll on all of us. I'm prepared for it. I teach people how to get prepared for it, and I'm telling you it's going to take a mental and emotional toll on me. And I've been through all of the training that a person needs to go through to get prepared for that. I've been through the training that will allow me to do what needs to be done when I face that situation. It will allow me to cope with living in a world where everywhere you turn, there's dead people. And even I'm going to have a hard time with it. So that's why I try so hard to get people to understand that it's more important to be mentally and emotionally trained than it is to have physical stockpiles of dry goods and products. It's the whole reason for our lights out situation. We do a training, and the one we've got coming up here in a few weeks is actually free. We do a lot of stuff for free, just getting the message out, because not everybody can afford what we do. Once a year, we do an event that is free to anybody that follows us on Facebook. So literally all a person has to do is click like on their Facebook page. And boom, they get to do it for free. This year's event is a Lights Out Weekend in Branson, Missouri, the last weekend of March, the 28th through the 30th. In a Lights Out situation, what we do is we have all of the different disaster scenarios written down on sheets of paper that are all in envelopes. We get together on Friday evening. Everybody gets registered in. Everybody signs their waivers, all that kind of good stuff. We get the paperwork aspect out of it. And then we divide everybody up into teams of, you know, 18 to 22 people, depending on how the families fall into it, right, size of the families. And we draw an envelope out of the box. We open it up, and we read the scenario. And for the next 48 hours until 4:30 on or 4 o'clock on Sunday, people live that experience as if they're stranded on the road with no electronics and no vehicles, and all they have to survive is what's in their get-home bag. They have to learn how to live with and work with people that they didn't even know the day before. You know, they have to learn how to trust other people to work with them while at the same time being fearful of others, because during that 48 hours, not only do they take 31 one-hour classes on everything from suturing to casting broken bones to making fire with water, 52 ways that paracord can save your life, all these different things we throw into it, they, 31 classes, but at the same time, they're living a situation, and we're constantly throwing different scenarios into that situation. When people leave a Lights Out weekend, they recognize three things. One, fire is the most important thing that they need for survival. More important than food, water, fire, or food, water, shelter, first aid, and hygiene. Fire is the most important because from fire you get everything else you need. The second thing people realize after a Lights Out weekend is that they have the mental and emotional skills. They've just lived it for 48 hours. You see what I'm saying? They've lived it for 48 hours, so now they've got the mental and emotional skills. When they face that situation, they're better prepared to survive that situation because of the mental and emotional skills that they develop at a Lights Out weekend. The third thing that they recognize is that none of us are Johnny Rambo. None of us are invulnerable. We are all vulnerable, and we have to learn to accept that. We cannot prepare to survive our vulnerability if we're unwilling to accept that we have vulnerability.
Correct.
You know, and so those are the three things that everybody learns from a Lights Out weekend. We typically charge anywhere from $100 to $200, depending on what our expenses are involved in doing that. We charge $100 to $200 per person, but this one coming up, March 28th through the 30th, is free to anybody that has liked our Facebook page. It's a phenomenal opportunity to get wonderful training from Navy SEALs, former Marines, you know, combat veterans. We've got one class that's taught by a paramedic that's on the fourth busiest ambulance in the country. He deals with gunshot wounds practically every shift. I mean, it's wonderful training. And this particular one on the 28th through the 30th is free to anybody that wants to attend. When they leave there, they will have not just the physical skills to survive, how to do things on their own, how to stand on their own two feet, how to face a situation, and come through it, but they'll have the mental and emotional skills of, hey, I've already done this. Now I'm better prepared to face it when it happens in reality, not in a training situation.
Correct.
So, and that's pretty much the basis of our teaching. Developing the warrior mindset is all about having those mental skills that they need to achieve the goals that they're going to have to achieve in order to survive. You know, the morals of survival is about having the emotional skills that people are going to need to have in order to achieve the goal of survival when they face these situations. And society intervention is all about getting people prepared physically. You know, the reasons why you need food, water, fire, shelter, first aid, and hygiene. That book actually has probably, in the back of that book, is probably the most comprehensive list of what people need to have for a physical item stockpile. It's a wealth of information.
And that book is going to be out when? That's the Develop the Warrior Mindset. That's the one with the listing.
No, the listing is in Society Indian Events.
Oh, okay, great.
Yes, yeah, Society Indian Events, the first 180 days, is currently available on Amazon. Of course, when we're at prepper shows and gun shows and all of our seminars and workshops, we have copies with us for people.
Right.
I think it's like $14.99 on Amazon or $12.99, something like that. The Morals of Survival, we are definitely releasing at Tony Tangalos's Prepper Fest Arizona weekend after next. We're hoping to have Developing the Warrior Mindset at the same time so that we can release both of those books at his expo. If not, if we don't have Developing the Warrior Mindset, then it'll be in that, you know, within a couple of days after that event, so we'll be taking orders at that event. Once we've gone through Tony Tangalos's Prepper Fest Arizona in Phoenix weekend after next, all three of those books will be available on Kindle, iTunes, Android. They'll all be available on Amazon. The Morals of Survival and Developing the Warrior Mindset within the next 6 months will be available in major bookstores around the country.
Great. Well, I think that's you've covered the waterfront, as it were, going from, again, thinking of projecting what could happen, and then helping people get the mindset to deal with it, and that is a critical part. I've always taught that that preparedness requires, first of all, a spiritual attitude, and that is that it comes from within. Nobody can force it on you. It's too much work. And most people recognize that, that the very thought, just thinking about all the things that go wrong can blow your mind. As you said, it takes you off your TV schedule if you start thinking about it too seriously.
That's right.
So first of all, of course, then spiritual, what that means is you start you start thinking about the things that you need to do. You start consideration. You start looking to how you're going to go about it. You start planning. And then after that, of course, as you indicated, fire, I kind of wrap around it with, I put shelter, because sometimes fire is not enough. You need the shelter. And where would you put your preps? And so fire is part of my shelter, so to speak. It's one of the things I include in my second priority, which is shelter. It's a place where you have a safe haven, a place that your family's safe and secure, at least for an interim period of time, regardless of where it is, whether it's downtown, third floor of an apartment building, out in the suburbs, or out in the ex-urban area in the boonies, up on the top of a hill where nobody can find you. It doesn't really matter. You need the shelter to protect you from the elements and a place to put your stuff. Because, and I always say to people, you need to be able to camp out within the walls of your shelter. You need to have a stash, as I call it, an in-home convenience store, where the stuff you have. And if you have that, then you do have a place that's safe and secure. And I don't talk in terms of defending it, but in essence, that is what it has to be. You have to be able to protect your stuff in order to have life. And those are things that people don't like to think about, because it means work. It means learning new skills, changing your paradigms, and perhaps thinking about the fact that you may have to you may have to do things you hadn't planned to do in order to protect your family. And if they, as your wife realized, it takes effort, it takes time, it takes a lot of ability to be able to do that. I think you've really explained that well to us today. It's good that more of us do this, so and share these things on the air and in our books, so that people can access it, because generally they're going to do it privately. I don't see preparedness, as I call it, or prepping, if you want to call it that, or being ready for whatever happens. I don't see that as being a big rah-rah thing. In fact, the less you talk about it, just do it, the better. Help people when you can if they're interested, but it's tough to do if they don't want to be. You can't force people into a lifestyle. They have to want to do it on their own. So any last words? At the end of my shows, I always give my guests the opportunity to do their elevator speech. I know you've given us some great summation already. Is there something we might have missed that you wanted to say that we could cover now?
Yeah, I would say if this is the last, if I only had one more thing that I could say, and it was the last opportunity that I was going to say something to any of your listeners, it would be this. You've been warned. This is pretty much your final warning. Things are progressing both with natural events and with man-made events globally. We've got some very dark days ahead of us. It's time to stop procrastinating and start getting prepared. If nothing else, on your way home from work tonight, stop at a Walmart or a grocery store, whatever, and get a couple months' worth of bottled water and dry goods and stick them in your cupboard. It can't hurt. There's nothing that hurts with being prepared. You don't have to spend a fortune on it. You can spend just a couple $100 on it. But put your family above the cost of that couple $100 you would spend on setting aside macaroni and spaghetti and oatmeal and water and things like that for your family. If nothing else, do that. Your family's worth it. You are worth it. Dark days ahead. It's time to get prepared. Quit wasting your time. So,
absolutely. Great summary. Dr. Prepper said once, he say, food storage is a too much food storage is a problem you can eat your way out of.
That's right.
And so you said the same thing. If you have too much bottled water, you just bought it at a time when it was cheaper, because all food products keep increasing in price. So it's an investment. You have to think of it as an investment. You buy a stock or a bond, you think it's going to be worth more in the future. But I can tell you that food stored over time and used appropriately, store what you eat, eat what you store, use it or lose
exactly.
It. If you don't, in using it, learning how to use it, one of my other three rules, I'm really strong on rules because it's easy to remember, they're all three, And so I remind people it's a stool. Any three-legged stool is going to be stable because all three feet can touch something, whereas a four-legged stool or chair, you know, one leg short, it's always going to rock, and you have to constantly support one side of it. Or if two of them are, you got two sides you have to support. But three-legged stool will always sit. It may not sit level, but it'll always be very, very stable. And that's what way you have to look at being prepared for the future. So those are the kind of things. But so the three rules of preparedness are practice, practice, practice. Because the more you practice it, the more you find out where your shortfall is, where your skills are lacking, where your imagination may need some bolstering. So hopefully, I'm looking forward to seeing you at Prepper Fest AZ in Phoenix on the 21st, 22nd, 23rd. Certainly, it's been a long time since we've been at shows together. I did the Vince Vannelli shows. We've done a lot of others, and it's going to be fun. And looking forward to seeing you there. And thanks for being on the show today.
Do I have time to say one more thing?
Yes, sir.
Cool. For those that want to read some of my writings and you know, can't get the book or whatever, I write articles for a magazine called Prepped and Prepared Magazine. You can go to preppedandprepared.com and read a lot of those articles at no charge. You can also download them on iTunes. So, and there's a ton of videos out there. Just study and get prepared and do what you can.
That's prepped, like in getting prepped with a
right.
And prepared. All right, great.
Right.
Dot com.
PREPPEDANDPREPARED.com.
Bob, look that up. I don't recall having been there, but that's probably because I don't know it all. Nobody knows it all. Nobody ever has, and nobody ever will. But we can learn.
Well, yeah, it's a fairly new magazine. Their first issue was January.
Oh, great. Well, I'll go check it out. Great. Maybe I should have them come on the show and talk about their magazine.
Oh, it'd be great. It'd be great.
I'll do them. All right, great. I'll use your name. How about that?
There you go.
All right, Bob, thanks for being on today. Certainly appreciate having you.
My pleasure.
Thanks for all your good work. Look forward to seeing you and hope that it continues to go well and that people understand that the morals of survival are really it's something that just should come naturally because as
exactly.
parents, as fathers, we are responsible for our families. Thanks again for being on, Bob. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
And we'll
Thank
be
you.
Back. We'll have you back again after the book comes out, and especially I'm looking forward to developing the warrior mindset because I think that's something we really have to work on, all of us.
Yes, it is.
Again,
yes, it is.
This has been the Dr. Prepper CPR talk show, Critical Preparedness Resources, and certainly now you can recognize that Bob Gaskin is one of those resources that can help you become prepared or get better prepared. Well,
right.
Dr. Prepper, this has been the Dr. Prepper talk show for today, and we'll be back soon with another edition. Thanks for being here and part of it. Be sure to contact Bob Gaskin at his, I think it's Bob at blackdogsurvivalschool.com. That's
right.
His training session. He made you an offer. You shouldn't be able to refuse a free training if you just show up coming up the week of the 28th of March. Thanks for being here today. We'll be back in the future. I'm Dr. Prepper. Have a great day.
Hi, I'm Joshua Swanigan with Urban Defense Institute, a reality-based self-defense and combative school in mid-Michigan. At Urban Defense Institute, we utilize our combined real-world experience along with years of diverse martial arts training to give you the tools and mindset to survive real-life aggressive conflict and get you and yours out alive. Find out more about our classes or book us for a seminar. We will travel at UrbanDefenseInstitute.com or on Facebook at Facebook.com/UrbanDefenseInstituteMI.
If you thought the award-winning Hoodswoods video series was cool, wait till you see this. From Karen Hood of Survival.com and Hoodswoods Video Productions comes Survival Quarterly Magazine. With some of the best names in the industry like Ted Nugent, Michael Hawk, Dave Williams, and of course Karen Hood, along with too many more to list, Survival Quarterly Magazine puts survival in the palm of your hand. Just visit SurvivalQ.com for current and back issues. And don't forget to keep up with all things Survival Quarterly at Facebook.com/Survival Quarterly.
You've been listening to the Preparedness Radio Network, offering helpful and timely tips on preparing for natural and man-made disasters. Timely and useful tips on gardening and homesteading. Until next time, remember, preparedness saves lives. This is the Preparedness Radio Network.